May it please the court, my name is Brad Ewalt. I'm an attorney out of Norfolk, Nebraska, and I represent Daryl Learman. I should note for the record, Your Honors, that I was not the trial counsel. I was appointed to represent Mr. Learman for his appeal specifically. I've filed a number of issues that I believe should be overturned in this case. The major issue that I believe in this case, I think the turning point in this case, was the applicability of Nebraska Rule 414 to information about prior bad acts for which Mr. Learman had been charged previously in a case just a couple of years prior to this case. In that case, however, Mr. Learman was acquitted of the charges, and the prosecution sought to include that evidence as part of their case in chief in this matter as well. Rule 414 allows the prosecution to use evidence of prior bad acts, prior sexual assault evidence for any reason, including the determination of whether or not the defendant committed the current offense.
By clear and convincing evidence?
Yes, by clear and convincing evidence. So we understand that there is a difference in the standards. It's a much lower standard in order to get the evidence in under Rule 414. However, we feel that the fact that he was acquitted of the prior offense should bar the use of that evidence later on under the doctrines of double jeopardy, collateral estoppel, and a violation of his due process rights as well. I think this is a matter of first impression in this court. Nebraska has not specifically dealt with this issue regarding Rule 414 in the past. It seems very few states have as well, although some of the states that have reached varying conclusions. There's a case out of New Jersey. It did not deal with Rule 414, but rather something similar to Rule 403 or 404 that determined that any time that a defendant is acquitted of a charge, that bars the use of that evidence later on.
What was the legal principle that the New Jersey court relied upon for that finding? Is it the New Jersey Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, something statutory, or something else?
Well, it seems to be based on the some New Jersey case law, and in addition, the 404 or 403 rule that's based on the federal rule over there. They referred to fundamental issues of fairness, essentially, so I believe that they're talking about the Constitution. They're talking about due process, I believe. So in this case, there was a rather lengthy hearing to determine the admissibility of this evidence under 414. Ultimately, the judge ruled that it was proven by clear and convincing evidence, and it was conditionally admissible, provided that the state showed that it was similar to the evidence that was issued at trial in the current case. The prior issue that Mr. Learman was acquitted of was a sexual assault of his older daughter, and this was his younger daughter that was making the allegations at this time. The concern that we have with allowing this evidence in, the biggest danger is the possibility of confusion for the jury. This was a very lengthy jury trial. It lasted about 8 days. And for the first 5 or 6 of those days, essentially the state was relitigating the prior case. So the jury was kind of inundated in this case with information about a victim for which Mr. Learman was not being charged at this current time.
Was a limiting instruction given at the time?
A limiting instruction was given at the end of the trial. With the jury instructions. It was not given at the time that the evidence was presented. So the jury goes in there, and immediately for the first several days of the trial, they're talking about the older daughter for whom he's not even being charged with. They're essentially relitigating that case.
Did you
ask for a limiting instruction or a mistrial or anything like that?
I'm sure they could have. Again, I was not the trial counsel.
Right, yes.
So.
Thank you.
I am sure that they could have done that at that time.
Was there any questioning or some means used at the point when the evidence was offered to convey to the jury the purpose for which it was being offered?
Not at the time. Not to my recollection upon reading through the record. Again, this was a limiting instruction was given later on during the jury instructions that the evidence that had been previously presented was to be considered, and it said for any reason. They can consider it for any reason. So I believe that the prosecutor, in his closing statement, argued essentially, our feeling is he argued that the jury was wrong on the prior case, that in this type of situation that the fact that he was charged again with similar situations would mean that he had to have done it. So,
did the jury know that he was acquitted in the first case?
It's a small county. It's a small town. I suspect they knew.
Well, I mean, was there evidence in the record?
Yes, there was evidence in the record later on. The trial court judge did allow evidence to be presented that he had been acquitted of that offense. So that was there. I know that the state objected to that. The state believed that that wasn't relevant, that that was unfair to put that in, but I would argue that that was...
How does that bear on your arguments, that the jury knows a prior jury mm-hmm. rendered an acquittal?
Well, again, I think what it did is that it presented the prosecution some ammunition to go in at the closing arguments and say, hey, this jury was wrong. So you should overturn, essentially, because he did this other charge, he's definitely guilty of this one, and you should correct that.
But contrary-wise, it could be argued the prior jury was correct.
I understand that, but with what happened, the prosecution did argue that.
Of course, the acquittal, or more precisely, the not guilty verdict on the former charge, simply determines that there was not proof beyond a reasonable doubt on at least one element of the charge in the original case. But how does that interface with the burden of establishing for purposes of this case that the fact was true by clear and convincing evidence, which is obviously a lesser standard?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Well, you have a higher standard that wasn't
right.
met in the first trial.
Right.
And you have a lower standard that the trial court found was met. How does that difference in the standard of proof that's required affect your argument?
I think at the very least that the fact of the acquittal should be more of a factor in determining the 403 balancing, that should be something that is taken into more consideration when doing the 403 balancing that's required under 414.
So you, in effect, would agree that it's not barred by the former verdict, because the former verdict was based on a higher standard of review. So the lower standard is not barred for that purpose, but your real argument, the heart of your argument, is a 403 unfair prejudice or confusion of the issues.
Correct. Argument.
All right. Thank you.
I guess if there are no other questions, I will reserve the remaining time I have for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, we think the district court correctly admitted the evidence of the acquittal charges against AL and the trial at present against BL. It undertook a lengthy pretrial hearing at which both AL and BL testified, and from which the district court entered an equally lengthy order, finding that there were startling similarities between the assaults on the two girls regarding the times that the ages of the girls when the abuse started, the nature of the abuse, the grooming methods, and a host of other factors, and found that because the simple fact of an acquittal of the charges against AL did not render that evidence essentially incompetent in a trial against the defendant with respect to BL, it said that it would conditionally admit that evidence upon evidence adduced at trial that would essentially tie it into the two. And when that evidence was adduced by the state at trial, then the court said, I find that the evidence from the prior acquittal, not used to saying that, would be admissible against the defendant in the case against BL. And we think that that was properly done.
Was the framework a signature crime?
Not necessarily signature crime, but I think you need to, one of the things that the courts, and there aren't many across the country that have admitted this type of evidence, but they all seem to look at what sorts of similarities there are between the prior offense and the instant offense, and the court went through, detailed the similarities in this. The girls were both his adopted daughters, that the ages of both girls was very similar when the abuse against them started. In fact, he began sexually assaulting BL while he was out on bond on the trial against, while the trial against AL was pending. There's, I believe, 3 years difference between the girls' ages, and there was some delay in reporting with AL, so the ages of the girls was extremely similar at the time he started abusing them. The court found that the, I believe called the grooming methods were similar. There were allegations that they had been sexually assaulted in the defendant's sleeping area of his truck. There were assaults at essentially truck stops, and again, there were other similarities that the court found were just simply beyond coincidence, that these had to have bearing on the facts that BL was assaulted and that AL was assaulted. And under 414, the court said that this evidence under 414 is exactly what basically 414 is directed at. It's the proclivity of a defendant to commit these sorts of offenses. And if you look at the language also of 414, it refers to evidence of an accused's commission of another sexual assault. It doesn't reference convictions or acquittals. It talks about behavior rather than essentially legal consequences. So essentially under 414, acquittal or conviction is not a determining factor. It is a factor, certainly, like any other factor, but it doesn't carry the day with respect to admissibility or inadmissibility. It was something that the court weighed and had to weigh somewhat heavily because there had been a verdict in that, and the verdict was one of not guilty.
When you refer to the purpose of 414, sort of in a global sense, what is it for?
The purpose of 414 is essentially in sexual assault cases to demonstrate the propensity of a defendant to commit other sexual assaults. And basically, when you're looking at propensity, you have to, as you said a little earlier, look at similarities. And the similarities in these cases are just disturbingly similar. I mean, I don't know how else to say that. But
so were there any safeguards in the trial to prevent the jury from being confused?
As the trial went on, and it was a lengthy trial, the jury was ultimately informed that the defendant had been acquitted of the charges against AL. And in the final jury instructions, the jury was instructed that the only thing before it were the charges against BL in this case. There had been other evidence of other sexual assaults that had been committed by the defendant, and the jury was entitled to use that evidence basically to whatever purpose it saw fit. But they were specifically instructed in the closing, at least in the closing instructions, that the only thing that it was, the jury was to decide was whether or not sexual assaults had occurred on BL within the confines of the allegations and the information. Optimally, in the best of all possible worlds, when the evidence was adduced at trial, it would have been better to say, give them some heads up, this testimony does not relate to the defendant's sexual abuse of the victim alleged in this case, but it is being offered for purposes, for whatever purposes you see fit. You are not to essentially, basically, it's not evidence that this defendant assaulted this victim, but it has other relevance that you can decide how much weight to give ultimately in the consideration of the charges against the defendant in this particular case.
Are there approved limiting instructions under the 414 context? Is there language that's favored for a limiting instruction?
You know, I don't honestly know off the top of my head. I'm sorry. It wouldn't be hard to craft such language.
What would such an instruction look like? Because I think earlier you said that 414, unlike 404, kind of allows for propensity.
Right.
And so how does a jury keep the two separate?
Well, it would have to, I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head right now, but you would have to inform the jury that we'll just call it the AL evidence for shorthand.
Sure.
The AL evidence does not bear directly on whether the defendant sexually assaulted BL, but it is evidence that he has been, it is evidence that such events may have happened in the past, and you are to use that evidence to whatever purpose you see fit in determining whether or not sexual assault occurred against BL.
Isn't the logical relevance of the AL evidence that he did it before, therefore he's likely to have done it again? Isn't that, it's propensity evidence, and 414 allows propensity evidence, doesn't
right.
it? So when the last sentence of subsection 1 of that statute says, if admissible, such evidence may be considered for its bearing on any matter to which it is relevant, I'm not sure how you would craft. I think there is more difficulty than perhaps you have estimated.
There may be. I don't think it would be unwise, maybe, to instruct them that this is evidence of an assault against a different victim than is being than you are considering the actual charges against. Excuse me.
Does the state have some obligation to suggest a pattern limiting instruction at some point in time?
I don't think it has an obligation to. The instructions are ultimately up to the district court. Anybody can suggest an instruction to the district court, but it's ultimately the court's responsibility to craft a set of instructions that are appropriate to the circumstances. And since there aren't that many 414 cases out there, and certainly there aren't many that, there aren't any that deal with this particular circumstance, and I think the district court, in instructing the jury, as it did at the close, essentially told them that you've got two separate circumstances here, and the evidence, ultimately, as all the evidence came in, the jury was informed that the defendant had been acquitted of the charges against AL, but those were still had some relevance to the assaults that were alleged against BL in this case.
And what was the relevance?
The relevance would be the...
Because it's not necessarily going to an element... Is that right?
It's not
evidence of an element in the primary.
Correct. It's element.
It's relevant to an issue in the case.
It's relevant to the defendant's propensity to commit such offenses under 414, as 414 allows such evidence to be admitted.
But propensity is not an element.
Propensity is not an element. No, it's part of
Is the propensity an issue in the case? I would suppose say relevant evidence could be, and sometimes is rather broad.
Relevant evidence is a broad category. So yeah, I think it under these circumstances it would be relevant evidence.
If it's propensity, isn't it relevant to all of the elements, that he committed all these elements once before, and the argument is he's likely to have committed all these elements again?
Yeah, I think that would be accurate. Yes. I see my time is up. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the judgments and convictions be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 41 seconds.
41 seconds, Mr. Ewald.
Thank you. Okay, I don't have a whole lot to say, but a question was asked earlier about the purpose of 414. As I understand it upon researching it a little bit, I think that 414 was created in part to deal with the issue of consent. Obviously, there have been a number of cases where the only information is the stories of the victim and the accused.
So you're contending that 414, the legislature did not have child sex assault crimes in mind when it crafted 414?
That's my belief, based on what I've read, and 414 is based on a federal statute, and it was the federal statute that I think took that into consideration.
Its language is not limited to...
No, I know. Its language is not limited to that, but that does appear to be what began the creation of this rule.
Well, it's the anti-404, isn't it?
It appears that way. If there's no further questions, I would ask that the convictions be overturned and this be remanded for new trial.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Ewald, for your service. The next case then is Shelter Insurance Company versus Gomez.